What's up? What's up? What's up?
What it do?
Hello, world. What it do? Hey. I guess we need to tell the people who we are, what we do, and all that. So, hey, who are we?
We are Shea Butter FC, also known as Shea Butter Football Club.
Shea Butter Football Club. And we are a podcast where we are two black women who are going to give our perspectives in terms of soccer or football and everything in between.
Wow. While delivering content with soul and seasoning that will moisturize your skin.
They're going to lay your edges flat.
And deepen your love for all things black women.
For sure, for sure, for sure. And so I guess we need to introduce ourselves. My name is Sky Jordan, because I be crossing up on these people. And I'm from Atlanta. Currently, I'm in the Wild Wild West in Southern California. And I guess, who are you?
Yo, this is Self, originally from VA, two up, two down, all day. Chilling amongst the trees now in the PNW.
In the trees, for real.
In the trees. In the trees, right? Yeah, that's where I'm from. That's who I am. And I'm gonna tell you that I came to the beautiful game by rooting for the Richmond Kickers. Shout out to the homies still playing out here. And Washington Freedom, who are now defunct, unfortunately. But shout out to me, Cam, and Brian Scurry, because that's what's up. And yeah, what you got? Like, how'd you get into this?
So I started playing soccer at the Y. And then I played in high school. But actually, like, how I started paying attention is either from the U.S. Women National Team, but then I grew up in Atlanta, so the Atlanta Beat. Shout out, RIP. Hopefully y'all get a team again. But I guess currently, you know, I guess the current club and, you know, part of how I got to pay attention was I am a Manchester United fan. And then Real Madrid. And then if we want to talk about professional women's, I was a diehard Chicago Red Stars fan for a while, but you know, I'm about to throw my allegiance to upcoming Angel City FC. What's good? So what about you? What you like currently out here in this world?
I mean, sometimes like is a strong word. I'm in a toxic relationship.
It's really, really toxic. You could do better, but go ahead.
I mean, I could do worse. So, you know, it is what it is, but a very toxic relationship that I can't quit with Chelsea Football Club. But shout out to the women for making me believers. The men hurt my feelings too much. But yeah, and then Real Madrid, shout out. So we got that in common. And as far as professional women's clubs, proximity is king. So I'm going to go with OL Reign. I'll go up for them. And yeah, and honestly, I hope to see them play some of the style of soccer that I like this season. We'll see what it looks like. They got some potential to do that. Looking for Spain, you know, is sort of my favorite country in terms of watching soccer, a little tiki-taka. We'll talk about that later. But I also like German football and Dutch football, Brazilian football, anything that involves the midfielders and runs and beautiful passes. And it's just going to be attacking and never boring. That's sort of what I'm here for. What gets you going? What do you like?
So, you know, I like my football as I like my basketball, as I like my football. I want embarrassment. I want highlight reels. I want to be like, ooh, wait, yeah, let's get it. So I like the transition. I like, you know, all the points, but I also like the technicality. I like the ball possession. I like the smoothness. I like the, you know, having the shivers and having to shimmy my shoulders because of the bombness that happens. I like the nutmegs. I like the putting people on the floor. So, you know, I like the possession styles and attacking styles of the Spanish league. I like Brazil as a national team, and they're just in football in general out through there. You know, Marta made me go, yeah, let's go, let's go.
Marta, the GOAT.
The GOAT, for sure. And then also I like the transitional paces. If we're talking about professional leagues, also aside from Spain, what's happening even in the US, even though people be like, then it is no tactics. There are tactics. Yeah. I love the transition that's happening in NWSL. And then I like what happened in the Mexican league. Cause you know, they be balling all the time, balling on your forehead. So I like those kind of styles for sure, for sure. So now that you know who we are, you know, what we like, what got us into the game, I guess we need to talk about what in the world is this podcast that you're listening to and what it's going to look like from this episode and the preceding episodes. Well, succeeding, however, yes, you know, the next ones. So in this podcast, we will talk about tactics. And we're going to get in depth in terms of player formation. We're going to look at games past and present. We're going to break down the master classes, you know, when things are going right. And we're going to talk about the disaster classes like we will later today across the globe.
I feel that. In addition to that, we're going to explore how Black culture and social issues collide within the beautiful game, particularly women's soccer. And that includes looking at the experiences of past Black players and how current Black players' experiences have changed and in many ways, and super unfortunate, not changed. And we will also look to the future because that's what we do. And we're looking to see what Black women are gonna do in the future of soccer, right? Either as great players and or as change makers, which many of them already are.
Yeah, we're gonna talk and have our little rants and hot takes and get our, you know, go in, have our feelings when things go off the rails. But then also give props for those who do spectacular things and give them their flowers for players who just be balling.
Absolutely. Always got to uplift. Both of us like to play GM. So we're going to speculate and give you some hypothetical musings about possible player movement, mm-hmm. league growth, league opportunities, and other random scenarios, because I'm random, that will make the game flourish and hopefully be more entertaining.
And all this to say, we're going to do all these things, say all these things, talk about all these things. And give it to you for your ears weekly because we want to provide a voice to the Black woman soccer football fan. You know what I'm saying?
Absolutely, because we out here, you know, so we want to make sure that y'all are heard. But most importantly, we are going to stay dropping those shea butter bombs.
Shea butter bombs. And what are those for the people? Educate the people about what that is.
Simply put, shea butter bombs are golazos for Black people. So when your favorite Black player puts that pretty ball in the back of the net from 25 feet, Woo! That's a shea butter bomb, and you better yell it when you watching it on TV.
Honestly, it could be even short range too, because they Black, yeah. It's just going to be a five
that's
ass
fair.
Shea
that's butter fair, bomb. That's fair, that's
you
fair.
Know, you know what I'm saying? For I sure, for sure, for sure, for sure, for sure. So I guess since y'all know what this is about, let's get into what we're going to talk about today. So today we're going to get in a little bit, in the first segment, we're going to dabble into the Champions League, the UEFA Women's Champions League, and what happened on both legs, and preview the next round for the semifinals. And then we're going to get into the Women's Soccer League, or the WSL, get into some matches of today. And we're going to delve into a particular match that involved Manchester United. And then we're going to get into the National Women's Soccer League, the NWSL. We're going to preview the Challenge Cup and deal with a video surrounding the Challenge Cup. And then after that, we're going to have a segment, our weekly segment called Rants and Raves, where we're going to get some things off our chest and show props to those who were blessed and did that thing this week. And then we're going to get you about this show. So yeah. I guess we need to get ready and kick it on off. Let's talk about this Champions League.
I mean, let's go, Sue. Let's get into it. So this past week, the second legs of three of the four quarterfinal matches were played. Lyon and PSG has been postponed till the 18th because, believe it or not, we are still in a panorama. So hopefully everybody gets well soon and we can get ourselves a lovely competitive match on April 18th, which is a weekend. So I hope y'all are tuning in. But we're going to talk about the matches that did happen. We're going to start with my girls, Chelsea. They played Wolfsburg. So in the first leg, they won 2-1, despite not playing that well and honestly being outplayed for large stretches of that match by Wolfsburg, who simply didn't put away chances. Had they done that, we would have been in big trouble. We took advantage of our opportunities despite our defense, which was not great in that first leg.
When she's not lying. Silves is not lying when, like, Chelsea, the first game, got really, really blessed that Wolfsburg couldn't put a ball in the net, because before the first half, if I'm recollecting correctly, they honestly probably could have been up 3-0 4-0.
Something like that.
And over the course of the game, that first game, they should have probably dropped seven goals into the net for sure. It was like a battering ram the first game. Like the timeline was all in a twist and turn, you know.
Yeah.
It was crazy.
Yeah. I think part of that too is people wrongly underestimated Wolfsburg, who mm-hmm. went to the finals last year. So I'm not really sure why. I know
you're right.
I know some of it. They lost Pernille Harder to the team they happened to play in Chelsea. And she came in handy. So I'm happy
yeah, she did. Moves.
But yeah, I never underestimate German teams. That's a terrible idea. The second leg, you know, we went in 2-1 with Wolfsburg having that away goal. I think we played a lot better. Still had some shaky moments for about 15 or 20 minutes of that game. But for the most part, got our back line together. We still missed Marin for sure. But it was a lot better, a lot more movement. Once Kirby and Kerr got going, the game sort of opened up. I will say the first goal was on a penalty call that I didn't think was a penalty.
Not a penalty.
Sam Kerr going down in the box. Having said that, though, I think the defender took the wrong angle, which was to go inside on the left there.
But so, Sam Kerr channeled her really good Ellen White, Rachel Daly. Like, it was a really good. It was good.
It was a little divey.
It made it do what it needed to do.
It did. But ultimately, hey, it got Pernille Harder a goal against her former team. So, I don't think that was fun for her, but, you know, she's got on that Chelsea blue now. When you got it on, you hit that badge and you keep going. So she was able to do that. And then Wolfsburg had an amazing chance on the other end to put it in the net and really make it a match and just whiffed on it.
Yep.
And not too long after that, Sam Kerr, to my opinion, shot the goal of the tournament so far. Playing in the box, gets it back to goal. Defender trying to keep her from turning right to put her right foot on the ball, grabs the back of her jersey. Kerr turns anyway and puts it in the back of the net. It's just a testament to how far her game has come. That back to goal play, the strength to be able to make the turn regardless of the defender, literally darn near draped on you, and to be able to slot it in and finish it in a career where she always hasn't been able to finish those kinds of plays. So shout out to Sam Kerr for the growth. I certainly appreciate it as a Chelsea fan. And I'm happy for her, man. So she's definitely added an element to her game.
And it seemed like after that goal, then like Wolfsburg kind of like, I don't know how to describe it. They could look kind of listless. They look kind of upset. Cause then Frank Kirby scored off a bad pass.
Yes.
And then it was like effectively over. And so
deflated.
Chelsea was way more prepared. They still were getting worked a little bit, but they were way more prepared. And Wolfsburg just didn't put the balls in the net. And so Chelsea ended up winning that. For sure.
I think there was just a level of deflation there. You know, it happens that way sometimes. You think about all those chances, and when you miss that many, it just feels like an extra sort of stab to the heart. So shout out to Wolfsburg for a competitive match. Chelsea moves on. It will mention their opponent in just a moment, but do we want to talk about the other fairly competitive game that was going on?
You're talking about the Manchester City versus the Barcelona?
The Barcelona, Barca, yes, yes.
Well, before we get there, we got to talk about what happened previously in that matchup where, you know, Gareth Taylor had told the world that he was effectively going to park the bus on Barcelona. And so me as a Manchester United fan who've witnessed this team multiple times this season, I was like, that's a bad idea. Cause that back line, while it's good, it is not that good. And, you know, Barcelona's gonna tap dance on it. And that's what basically happened in the first game. They parked that bus, and then Barcelona came and hopped up on that bus and ran through that bus and flipped the bus up on his forehead and on the side and everything and rolled it on down the street. They had fun. They were really overwhelming.
And
so, like, tell the people what happened a little bit with that.
Sure. So the homie Scott is right, and the homie Scott has been banging that drum pretty much all season about
bang
how that City backline can get worked by a team that can possess and has speed, and that is who they came up against. So parking the bus probably wasn't the best strategy when you have midfielders of caliber who can break down any defense. Now I will mention, in fairness to City, they were playing without Steph Houghton and had to rearrange their backline. I'm not so sure her playing would have mattered.
It wouldn't have helped.
Calmed him down a little bit, but she wasn't going to get any faster, and neither was anybody else in that back line. Barcelona had their way in that first leg. They won 3-0. They probably could have won 6 or 7-0. They
probably just
missed
6-7
chances. Yeah. I think particularly Esme Carter probably didn't expect, or I'm sorry, Esme Morgan, sorry, didn't expect to start that game. But she was defending on the right back, in the right back position, and Carolyn Graham Hansen could have walked to that goal anytime she wanted to. It was just right. So open for her all game. You had the speed of Ashawala, who scored twice, once in each leg. So shout out to those Shea Butter Bombs for sure. But yeah, Barcelona mm-hmm. had their way. When you have a midfielder of the quality of Alexia Putellas and the like, right? It's just going to mm-hmm. be really hard to stop that. Yeah, that was a beat down. Beat him down.
And so what was crazy about that game is Gareth Taylor refused to he refused to play the cheat code that he has in Roseville. He yes. refused to start her. And so this was the one player, if you didn't know, tactical break for you, that you could have used this cheat code in Roseville to break down the possession and what the Spanish team, because effectively it is what the whole national team is made of. What Barcelona likes to do in possession of the ball with a player like Roosevelt, if you would have started her with Sam Uys, and then you could have counteract a lot of the stuff they were trying to do and utilize her with him in order to create chances. But they didn't do that. So they got spanked. Yes. But it's like he decided in the second game to recalculate and recalibrate. Mm-hmm. And man, it got a little better for him.
It did. I thought Manchester City had a much better showing the second leg. He started Sam Uys and Roosevelt at the same time. Could have knocked me over with a feather on that one. Mm-hmm. And started, though I think he had to, with Lauren Hemp out, started Janine Becky, which gave him a lot more speed. Mm-hmm. And I think that worked in their favor. I think it was a little odd because Janine Becky and Ellen White are such different speeds that I think sometimes it's really hard for them to connect. But like she can go with a Roosevelt, ended up scoring. Janine Becky ended up scoring the first goal. And Man City actually ended up winning that game 2-1 on her goal and then a penalty
for it was Sam a flop. Lewis. That was a flop. Wait.
Who wasn't on?
It was on Ellen White.
Yeah.
Miss Flopper herself. That was a flippity flop.
It looked a whole lot like that World Cup penalty. Mm-hmm. I still don't think it's a penalty. But all right. Yeah, but yeah, so they got the benefit of the doubt. Like I said, Asisat scored again in that game, which was wild because Roebuck, who I absolutely think played phenomenally for City as the goalkeeper, was coming up so high, like uncomfortably high to try to stop those runs and cut off the speed of Asisat. And then like 2 seconds after I saw that, they scored anyway. So props to her for trying to shut it down, but there's just nothing you can do about that when the other team's faster than you
right.
and can possess the ball and can pass the ball out of super tight spaces. I just want to give a shout out to Barcelona. So yeah. sexy how they Woo! Pass out of tight spaces. Woo! I just want to give a shout out to that.
Yo, that's what I'm telling you. When yeah. I tell you I like my soccer, like when I like my football, my soccer looking like that, like I was just like, whew.
Yeah.
Lord Jesus.
They're going to be a problem for whichever French team comes out of this tie. So I'm definitely looking forward to that. And we can briefly touch on the last match. Mm-hmm. We now know Chelsea's opponent will be Bayern Munich. This is not a disrespectful thing to Bayern. They were just so dominant. We didn't have a whole lot to right. mention. So
they had a beautiful crossing goal in the second game.
Yes.
It was beautiful. It was like beautiful ball. Beautiful.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Shout out to Berenstain for getting the goal. You know, Shea yeah. Butter Bombs all day. So we always want to uplift. Hey, we want to hey, uplift hey. There. For sure. But they were so dominant. And we certainly could talk about what they're doing in the league. They are undefeated. They haven't dropped any points. They're 51 points. And they've only had 3 goals, I believe, scored against mm-hmm. them while they've scored yeah. roughly like 60-something. It's an absurd statistic. Absurd. Right. So they're a little scary for me as a Chelsea fan. And they're better at defense and they're better at finishing their chances. And so I'm very nervous. We will not sleep against them, but it should be yes. a good matchup.
It's like similar with Barcelona. They have like an unbelievable goal clip too, where it's like mm-hmm. now 100 goals.
Yeah, something ridiculous. Something.
And so Barcelona won the Manchester City leg. So they'll be facing the winner of the, what is that, April 18th match between yeah. PSG and Lyon?
Yes.
Which in the previous match... which was actually a really, really close game until this fake penalty occurred.
Ooh,
the fake legendary Formiga inadvertently hit a ball, which I don't even think that it hit her hand. Actually, probably hit her shoulder. It was called a penalty in the box when actually she wasn't even in the freaking box.
Right.
She wasn't in the goalkeeping box. And so it was just a bad penalty. For whatever reason, didn't get reviewed. So Leon got a away goal, I'm yes. understanding, basically from a penalty that never should have happened. And so PSG, while honestly, they're probably the better team, is going to have to score at least two goals because away goals carry more weight in the Champions League. And so we'll see what happens on the 18th. Yes. But yeah, that's the semi-final match kind of slight preview. And so as we wrap up this Champions League's matches, we're about to take a little break. But afterwards, we're going to talk about a typical day in the Women's Super League, the WSL in the UK. We're going to talk about, in particular, I guess we're going to dive in to what was my Manchester United's loss to Brighton.
Ooh.
We'll be back.
We'll be back in just a moment.
Hey, so what's up? What's up? So now let's get into these Women's Soccer League over there in the UK. Women's Super League.
Yes.
Over there, the WSL. And let's talk about this Sunday's matches. I guess before that, we need to give a shout out. We need to give a Shea Butter Bomb shout out to who?
Kenza Dolly in the West Ham game. They dropped 5 on Reading. Can't believe that's the same Reading that beat United.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5 goals.
Yes.
Yes.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Yes. Kenza Dolly dropped an absolutely beautiful goal in their game versus Reading to get a win for West Ham and quite possibly keep them out of relegation, though that relegation battle is going to be a wild, wild finish in these coming weeks because they all play each other. But for the most part, the league went to form this weekend,
right?
Save for one match. Well, and
we're going to talk about it. Let's talk about the other matches before we go.
Okay. Here. Okay. You want me to soften the blow here? Okay.
Yeah. So talk about
Most of them were blowouts. Chelsea won 6-0 against Birmingham City with a hat trick for Sam Kerr, who I think is now the leading goal scorer in the league for the season. She's tied with Miedema, who I believe scored at least once, might have scored more than once today against Bristol City. Ebony Salmon did not have a great day, but shout out to her because she's been balling this season.
Balling, dropping them Shea Butter Bombs.
19 years old, so I have nothing but high hopes for her. And I hope English soccer figures out a way to capitalize on her speed and on the ball skill.
That part.
Also, and that's sort of a touching on the teams in the top of the table. Also, Manchester City won 3-0 with goals from a goal from Janine Becky and I believe Carolyn Weir. Mm-hmm. And Everton won 3-1 and is trying to gain ground on those top four teams. So they're out here balling. They seem to have gotten their tactics straight. I think the addition of Jill Scott has been a phenomenal add for them and really stabilized that team. So, everything else seemed to go to form, but we're going to have to talk about it. And Betta, I mean, you're going to have to talk about it. So what happened to your girls today?
Hold on now. Everything went to form except for with my beloved Manchester United women. So we're going to talk about them extensively in this segment. Today, my squad played Brighton, which is led by the greatness that is Hope Powell. And earlier this week, she said, you know, they asked her, what are you going to do when you're going to deal with the Manchester United? And she's basically said, I'm effectively going to, in more terms than not, park the bus. We're going to stay super organized and let them try to come through. And at that point, I knew she had been watching film. And so she saw some of the issues that I've seen all season, which I'll get to in a second. And so, of course, she parked the bus with intents to effectively let Manchester United struggle with passing and then kind of force itself into a bunch of mistakes. And if they could capitalize on something like a penalty on a handball in the first half, it go up, then they could just effectively just hold the line and just stay secure and protect the goal and have Manchester United run around and take shots and not have anything go in and win the game. And that's basically what happened. So my team had a disaster class today. But it was a part of a reoccurring thing on top of some injuries that occurred all throughout the season, that we just really need to get into the facts that are the Manchester United issues. And so should I break it down?
I'm gonna let you cook because that's your team. If I talk about it, I'm a hater. So I'm gonna let you go and I'll interject as I see fit.
Okay, so let me explain to y'all what had happened was. So with my Manchester United, I've watched a couple of games before the season. I had heard about some issues in the midfield. I mean, the homie Sills has said, you know, midfield's a little issue. It's a little problem. It's a little bit, you know. Even beyond that, you know, I had watched some things before the acquisitions of Tobin Heath, Kristen Press, Alessia Russo, that you could see that there were some issues throughout the team. And they were kind of like scrapping together wins and so forth. But what I've noticed through watching all these games in full is that there are three major issues that need to be addressed at some point ASAPtual, but particularly in the offseason, which are the following. The first is there are some really big breakdowns in terms of fundamentals, in terms of the passing. The team collectively can't cohesively pass, whether short or long. They have trouble in defending and offending, playing offense and set pieces as a result also. And so you're having, when you can't pass, when you can't do set piece defense, when you can't deliver set piece worthy type of balls and passes, then you're going to be struggling and having issues in the first place. Add that on top of the fact that you have some personnel issues where you don't have the quality of players you need to have in terms of the midfield. And that would help to kind of mitigate some of these passing issues. And you have a lot of youth all across the team, on the back line, on the front line, every line. And then you add this together with some incurring injuries that happen over the course of the season, then you got some big, big problems that just get exacerbated when you add in the last portion where you have tactical implementation failures, as within the tactics for this team that have been implemented. Casey Stoney, the manager of Manchester United, has desired to run a 4-3-3, which is four people on the back line. You got two fullbacks, two center backs, three midfielders, and then three people on the front line, where you have two wingers and a striker in the center, a central midfielder, forward. And so basically in having this, you know, it will work and be cool because, you know, over the time in my paying attention to what was going on, I could see what Casey Stoney was trying to do. She acquired the pieces. She acquired all these attacking pieces that were like luxury sports cars. She got this Ferrari. She got the Maserati. She got the Mercedes. She got all these fast little cars ready to grow and roar to effectively burn down the league because she's a phenomenal defensive line. So basically what she could do is set up some kind of tactics, set up the personnel in a way where with her attacking pieces that she acquired, when she got the Tobin Heaths, the Kristen Press, the Alessia Russos, with the Lauren Jameses and the Ella Toons and the Jackie Gronins, that she could put all the points on your forehead while being able to craft up a phenomenal defense that has given the top of the table mad problems. And so she could have the fullbacks run up and down the flanks, the wingers running all around, have the midfield service someone that's in the nine position, the service of Alessia Russo. If you wanted to service a phenomenal winger that is Kristen Press, who could also play a nine, could also be in the midfield, you know, service whoever and be like a complete nightmare to defend while having phenomenal defense. In theory, that would be beautiful and work, you know. However, injuries dismantled all of this, you know? And so in the process, as a result, you're having tactical implementation failures because of the first two major issues I pointed out, the breakdown in passing and the quality of players and the issues in terms of just doing the fundamentals correctly. You then effectively don't have a sound midfield. And so the biggest issue all season has been in the midfield and the inability to pass through the midfield to the front line or away from the back line. And so you've put mad pressure on the back line to try to hold up and not fall apart as youth. And then you put mad pressure on the front line, particularly even in the midfield with your 10, and who is usually a young player like Ella Toon, Lauren James, to have them make decisions that as young players, they haven't gotten to the point of maturity to do yet. Hmm. And so in the process, they can't service the balls correctly. So who is your 9, who has been Kristen Press for large chunks of the season because Alessia Russo has been hurt. And so you're effectively then taking one of the best players in the world out the game, because if your midfield is having issues moving the ball to the front line, and then you're relying on utilizing the 9, you must have somebody who can adequately service the 9. But when that is not happening, you then are effectively removing that 9 out of the game. And so then you're then forcing the wingers to have to put in crazy work, moving up and down to retrieve the ball out of the 9 midfield to bring it up back and forth. On top of that, you then take out one of your best attacking midfielders in Jackie Gronin, mm-hmm. where she has to cover sideline to sideline, to effectively make up for what is lacking in midfield quality, as the defensive midfielder, who has typically been Haley Ladd, has had to drop back and protect the back line because of all the passing issues that are going on. And so as a result, you effectively have cut off your 9, you're forcing mad work on the wingers and fullbacks. The fullbacks are then coming out of position that are causing the center backs to be overtaxed with the defensive midfielder. And so then you're then causing all kind of errors to happen on top of the errors that are happening in set piece defense. And you got an erroneous goals and everything's going off the rails. Yeah. And so in effect, as the time has gone, this 4-3-3 is then effectively like being implemented week in, week out, as several people have been injured, as several people have been in and out of the lineup. And you're getting to a point where, yeah, you might have won a bunch of games previously as other teams were either injured or coming into form or learn how to gel or just bad, that is catching up to you now when you're all super hurt and injured, and you effectively have schemed in a way your whole team out of the game plan. And that's basically what has been happening.
Oh, no, absolutely. And I think, you know, I'll let you run with that. And I think you pretty much covered most of my sentiments. I certainly do want to acknowledge that injuries have not helped Manchester United, considering who's been hurt. They are the new injury FC for sure.
Yes.
And I think I've seen a slight adjustment on Casey's part recently with the formation being, I think, a 4-2-3-1, but that effectively still leaves too much room, particularly if you're dropping those two midfielders back to help defend. So essentially putting 5 on the back line. It's just, it's the midfield, right? Like it's the youth and just the struggling to find the pass, even when somebody's screaming they're open, right? And if you're going to insist on playing with a 9, particularly in a 4-2-3-1, where the 9 is up top all by herself. And again, it's usually Kristen Press, who hasn't really played 9 since early in her professional career.
Right.
Yeah, it's going to be a bit of a disaster, right? And teams are just going to park the bus, much like Hope Powell did. There are ways to scheme around that, right? Like you could do a 3-5-1 just to make your passing lanes a lot smaller, and like the ability to mess up the pass, it almost covers for that because it's such a confined amount of space. Having said that, I'm not so sure, you know, in terms of timeline, that's worth doing now. I think today effectively knocks Manchester United out of that Champions League competition.
Right.
I'm hoping they can keep fourth just for your sake, because Everton has seemed to have found their form.
Right.
And that's without arguably their best striker and Govan. So, yeah, I think what are some of your fixes for that? I know I've heard you say a few things, but what's the one thing you think
Casey I mean, the most important part at this point is just to keep winning games. And then you wanted to – let's say you still do have hope for the Champions League spot. You got, you know, you're on the last hour. Your heart rate is at the minimal, right? Mm-hmm. You can almost get there. You need to win out. And you also need to make up goal differential. You have phenomenal attacking players. Even for those of those, Jackie Gronin, Ella Toon, Lauren James, Kristen Press should put mad goals on the board if you allow them. Even with the Lucy Stanifer, either with the Haley Ladd, heck, even with the Millie Turner, you should be able to put with Anya Battle, Anya Botley, and Maria Thor's daughter.
I have
Thor's daughter.
Yeah.
Thor, you could they could service balls up the field. Like, you have the talent to do this, but you have to create a formation that allows it to happen. And so I was thinking of a 2 up top, then 4-4, where you effectively would put 4 back there. You keep the 4 back there, but with the 4 in the midfield, you give the freedom for them to either join an attack or help protect and defend. And then with the 2 up top, you prevent the isolation of like a Kristen Press, put her up there right. with Lauren James or Ella Toon, and allow them to go to work and move wherever the heck they need to move.
Yeah.
I think one of the bigger issues in the recent games is that Casey Stoney has had Kristen Press play interior while Lauren James was playing on the other side, on the exterior, on the wing. And that's particularly problematic because while Lauren James is a phenomenal ball handler to a point, she hasn't evolved to a winger yet. She's a young player. It took Kristen Press, Tobin Heath years to get to that point. Mm-hmm. She's not there yet. So while she can handle the ball, what I noticed teams were doing recently, and they did it today even, is they were effectively allowing her move up and down the wing, and then they would trap her. Because when they realized she couldn't get the ball to other people and the passing was bad in the midfield, they took her out the game. And so already the 9 was out of the game unless whoever, Kristen Press, Jessica Sigsworth, moved outside of that position. And so you effectively had shut down the offense. Where if you would have had Kristen be on the wing, she is a comfortable winger. She y'all, she used to be the she used to do this all the time, all the time, where she was effectively in each game a forward midfield hybrid. And so she can carry the ball up and down the flanks. She can service people. She, if things get in trouble, that's fine. She can take 5 people with her and service the ball to whoever else. She could have serviced to Ella. She could have serviced to Jackie. She could have serviced it to Lauren. And so she just needs the outlet to steadily be involved in the game. And it's all game, because this woman would put up at Chicago Red Stars in particular, put up goals at the 89th minute, the 90th minute, extra time minute, just putting goals to either tie the game, win the game. Yeah. And so you needed to let that free to be able to get involved, as with you needed to give Lauren James movement to be able to move and be free and hold up the field and support the midfield in the center. And it's kind of funny, in a couple of games, the last couple of games they played together, you could see where they actually switched inadvertently into the right spots.
Did it themselves,
and almost either scored goals, or if they were in the wrong spot, they almost scored goals in the wrong spot. When they got in the right spots, they scored the goals. Mm-hmm. It's like, if you would have did that from the jump, they would have helped you burn down the other team's defense and help you just solidify the wins against Arsenal. Mm-hmm. Heck, even today, if they were healthy, to be quite frank.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I think most of the goals I've seen Lauren James score over the past couple of years have been dead central, or pretty much she's drifted slightly. Looks like normally left, maybe right sometimes.
Right.
So yeah, I think even just switching those two would have probably helped solve a lot of your problems. But having said that, like you said, went out the rest of the year, but what's the one fix you got for them going forward?
Make sure Jackie Ronan is never on nobody's wing. I guess the biggest thing is to unlock your players so they can attack and flow and be free.
How does Casey Stoney do that?
And let go of the concept of the 9.
Yes, that I agree with. You can
just let it go.
Manchester City men do it all the time, and they have one of the best 9s ever. I think too, hiring an offensive mind, almost like an offensive coordinator, would
That part too
go a long way, because that's not Casey's wheelhouse. I'm not saying she can't learn it, but that's not her expertise, right? So you need sort of to be able to do that in tandem. So I think hiring somebody with an offensive and super attacking mindset,
it can't be you rely on a Kristen Press, Tobin Heath, because I've heard this and seen this hot take from several people. Mm-hmm. They are still players in her system. She is still the manager.
Yes.
And so she needs to have an offensive coordinator.
Yes.
To work with her. She's a phenomenal defensive coordinator of any tactics on the football field.
Right.
So she needs an offensive coordinator to help her. She needs the Eric Bieniemy, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So what does that look like? She needs to go to Spain. She needs to go to Italy. She needs to go to the United States, go to Mexico, grab somebody out of some of these leagues to help her scheme in game and game to game, to make adjustments, to utilize her players to the best of the ability. Because if she had that, she wins a lot of these games. And we're talking about today, oh man, they lost to Brighton, but because of injury, but yo, they going to the Champions League and they got to get this person and da 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 da. Instead of, man, we hope they finish in fourth at this point.
Because that's not a guarantee either. And I think that's a big part of it too, but also just player acquisition. I'm super interested to see, regardless of whether they make the Champions League or not, because at the end of the day, United's rich. So they can spend money. Just interested to see who they get, right? Because you still have to have the quality players to do that. If you look at the Champions League, the teams that are successful spend money or at least have players of a certain quality. You can't build a Champions League team organically anymore. Like, women's football is sort of past that point. You gotta drop money. I think there are a few out there. I know I would have a wish list as a GM for them. But I believe Engen from Wolfsburg is available. I think she's an incredible holding mid, and she can still get out of tight spaces and sort of dangerous situations on the ball. She's really calm. She doesn't seem to be fazed by much. I don't think you can get Andy Sullivan, but I think an Andy Sullivan type who also can play defense, but is incredible on the ball, incredible in attack, can run with people, but also can sort of dime passes over lines or to the wings. And it's just doesn't have a whole lot of panic, is incredibly smooth, is taller, right? So it goes further, right? Like, people can't keep up with her stride for stride. And I think there are a couple of players that she might have a shot at. I think Alana Cook's contract is up at PSG, if I'm not mistaken. And I believe she is a dual citizen. I believe
her
father is British, right? So,
and she serves beautiful balls.
Yeah, and she's an incredible defender and can help in the attack. Is it going to get phased? Plays the right angle most of the time. Can play center back, is probably best at that position, but you could probably tuck her in on the right side as a compliment to Ona, and it wouldn't look terrible. So you can sort of have her as a stopgap if there's injury or you can't necessarily acquire the outside back that you want. And the last one, and it hurts my heart. Mm-hmm. It really does.
Say it.
Because there aren't a lot of nines in women's football, right? Like, not true line, sort of that Abby Wambach style of, I play centrally, I do hold up play, I'm strong. I'm a ram it down your throat. And Casey Stoney seems to be committed to that, which isn't surprising. There's a lot of philosophical English football tied into having a nine. And there's one that sits on Chelsea's bench most of the time, right? In Bethany England. And I think she has the mindset to play for Manchester United. And while we are rivals, that is not our biggest rival. And so I don't think it's an affront to the fan base in the same way as it would be if she went to, say, a Tottenham, right? Mm-hmm. Or even an Arsenal. So, yeah, I think she would work well with Casey. I think she'd fit into that culture and that team. I think she's a very good goal scorer. She was the leading goal scorer for us last year. And if you give her a chance, she's hungry. I think she's out to prove people wrong. I think she wants the spot on the national team. And so that might be somebody worth acquiring. And you have the money to do it. So we'll see.
Cha-ching. That's what you got to do.
And cha-ching?
Okay. Yeah, cha-ching. You got to break the bread. Right, but yeah, I mean, in the offseason, they for sure have to solve these fundamental breakdowns in the passing. They got to just pass. Just practice. Pass all summer. Pass into the preseason. Pass every practice.
Yes.
Aside from that, fix their training facility issues, because too many people have gotten hurt.
Yes.
This isn't a one-off. You've had some serious issues where you lost your star players for months. Kristen Press has been hurt for a month. Leslie Russo has been hurt for multiple months. Tobin Heath has been hurt. Leah Golson's hurt. Haley Ladd is now probably hurt for the rest of the season. Ivana Fuso is hurt.
Oh.
You know, we could keep going on and on and on. You have to fix the issues that are either happening in training or with the training pitch or both. But yeah, making those changes, bringing in the correct personnel, and then getting an offensive coach to correct these tactics to make the changes, I mean, is important. Blacko had to go through it. Emma Hayes had to go through it.
Yes.
Casey's going to have to do it.
Yeah. And I think her ceiling is very high. I think she is talented. Friendly reminder, she's in her second year in the WSL. So she's obviously still learning. We both like Casey Stoney very much.
Yeah. Casey Stoney is fine. She's fine.
Yeah. So I want good things for her, except for maybe against my Chelsea. But yes, I want
excuse
her to succeed.
You want great success. Thank you very much. Yes.
Okay. But yeah, so I'm rooting for her, and I want good things for the players. I've grown to like some of the Manchester United players. So here's hoping the rest of the season plays out well and that next season is looking up.
Right.
So before we get to our next segment, we're going to take a quick break. In our next segment, we're going to preview a little bit the NWSL, talk about some things we might not have liked that we saw this week from the league. Woo. And we're going to give you our rants and our raves before wrapping up the show. So stay tuned and we'll be back in just a few seconds. Welcome back to Shea Butter FC podcast with Silves and Sky. So butter. We got to whisper that from now on. That's right. So we're going to jump in now to our domestic league, the National Women's Soccer League, NWSL for the fans. We're going to do something a little different. We're just going to point out a handful of players, Black players, that we feel people should be looking out for that aren't necessarily on the national team or aren't necessarily known to the larger soccer community here in the United States. But before we do that, speaking of Black folk and Black soccer players, we need to talk about the promotional video that the NWSL made this week.
Oh, Lord Jesus Christ.
To promote the Challenge Cup, which was very successful last year. To give credit to the league, it was the first professional sporting event, team sporting event in the United States to be completed successfully during the pandemic. So always going to give them props for that. However, some other things happened at that Challenge Cup last year. So this was in the summer, right in the midst of what had happened with the murder of George Floyd by the police in Minneapolis, St. Paul. This was on the heels of the Breonna Taylor murder while she slept in her bed not too long before the Challenge Cup started or earlier in 2020, and all the other acts that had happened and bringing attention through sport to these things, a la what Colin Kaepernick did in the NFL and what others have done before. And the NWSL decided this was worth highlighting, which would be all well and good, except last year's started off well, didn't end very well. We've heard, obviously, coming out of last year's Challenge Cup stories from current and former players about some of the issues they had, and particularly having those conversations with their white teammates, right? The lack of training, the lack of DEI, everybody's favorite thing these days.
It was it is clear that the National Women's Soccer League, the NWSL, did not have a single ounce, a piece, an iota, anything of a diversity, equity, inclusion officer, office, entity in their organization.
Yes.
So this all this crap was handled horribly.
Yes.
Particularly with the Black players.
With the Black players. And I think the culmination of that, or the symbol of that, unfortunately, because it keeps being shown over and over again, which we're getting to in just a second, was the moment that Casey Short, now Kruger, broke down on the pitch just from, I imagine, as a fellow Black woman, the load that is being Black in this country and having to be in predominantly white spaces and having to have conversations that, quite frankly, your white coworkers don't want to have. And in that moment, famously, is being held by Julie Ertz. So fast forward to this Challenge Cup. The league obviously wants to capitalize on the success of last year, right? It's launched the careers on the national team of several players, or the relaunch, if you're talking about Christy Mulis.
Right.
So they wanted to make a hype video, a presentation video, and they seem to take pride in the fact that they confronted racial justice issues, regardless of Black people telling them they didn't necessarily do a good job.
Right.
All well and good. Not well and good, but obviously, okay, it's going to go forward. Who am I but a lowly fan, right? But in this hype video that came out this week, they show the clip of Casey and Julie on the field. They're showing Casey Kruger's trauma to promote their league and promote the work they have professed to be doing, even though they should be and could be doing more. And I'm not going to lie to you. When I saw that, I was enraged and I stopped the video because I had no desire to see anything else.
Because it was crazy about the clip and how it was inserted. And then they had like a clip of some, like, I think it was Oil Rain and a bunch of rainbow kits.
Yes.
Where basically they were acting like they solved transphobia, racism, homophobia, LGBT phobia, everything in the midst of this Challenge Cup. And it's like, where on earth is the diversity and equity and inclusion office, anybody, rep? Did they exist? Did you get one? Have y'all read the anti-racism books? Did y'all do the work? Because clearly it's not looking like it. And I know, did you even talk to the Black Women's Players Collective, which was spawned during all of this, to see, hey, is it cool for us to put this moment in the video? Is it cool for this video to look like this? Did you have the conversations?
I suspect not. I suspect not.
Because it was like, it was pointing out, don't put this out there. Don't make this video. Like, don't stop capitalizing on Casey Krueger's trauma. Like, don't do it like this.
Exactly. And yet here we are, still talking about this almost a year later. And this is on the heels of also this week, the NWSL putting out a policy around trans athletes, which was A, rather exclusionary to our non-binary siblings, and B, not a very good policy. A lot of pushback on that as well, rightfully so.
Right.
A lot of stuff in there that's not backed up by science. So in many ways, as much as we love watching the league, they got to do better. Like, this
they
is
gotta do better.
On you. This is
2021.
Your world,
so. Like, you got to do better, be better. Like, and if you do have a diversity and equity inclusion rep, like, do they have genuine influence?
Right.
Do they have the correct power, or is it stuff that make you feel comfortable as white people?
Exactly. So,
because that's the bigger overarching problem that is plagued the success of football in this country. It's right. Like prevented the billions from happening in the women's game because we're allowing racism to torpedo the sport. People out here think that black and brown and Asian people do not like football in this country.
Right.
So if you drive around, they play it. They love it. But they can't get the access to it because of the pay for play, because it's how it's set up, how you can't get the access from the college ranks to the pros. And so that's why you see the disparities. And, you know, you don't need to do a study to figure it out. You need to get unracist. You need to get anti-problematic. You need to get anti-racist, anti-problematic, and be better.
Absolutely. Couldn't have said that better myself.
Lord Jesus.
So to transition, there are games being played coming weekend on the 9th and the 10th. To kick off to the Challenge Cup. Another issue is the national team will be playing on the 10th and the 13th. And so your best players, or certainly your most recognizable players, won't be here for the beginning of the Challenge Cup. And you have some big clubs. You have a Portland, you have an Orlando, you have a Houston, you have other clubs playing with notable players missing. I think North Carolina is playing as well. So yeah, it's going to be interesting. It's a gift and a curse, right? National team players bring notoriety, brings a certain level of skill sets, right? These are the players you want the world to see. And it's a problem because the NWSL takes place outside of almost every other league in the world's time table, which is from fall to spring. We go from spring to fall, essentially. So that's always hard and complicated, and it always runs up against the international friendlies and the FIFA schedule. But also it is a chance for players that you might not know to get some shine, or some players you might've forgotten about, to make their case for being back on the national team or captaining their current club team. So we're going to talk about those players. I think we have a handful that we want to point out. 5 black players, by the way.
Yeah. Let's get into it.
You want me to go first? Or you want to go first?
You go first. Go ahead.
All right. So mine, going to stay here in the Northwest. We have acquired Ziara King. Shout out. She's super interactive on Twitter. Young, hungry, forward, love her movement on the ball, love her speed. Can't wait for her to get some of these sophisticated runs down. And she's honestly just a joy to watch. Again, I like my soccer fun. And she makes it fun, and she plays with a smile on her face. She's also about her business on these social issues, social justice issues. So props to her for really stepping into that as a rookie, by the way, in her first tournament. She definitely stood out last Challenge Cup, so I don't foresee that changing for her. I'm really interested to see this partnership with Bethany Bowser, who's also been thriving at OL Reign, in part thanks to Vlacko's coaching before he left. So, I'm really hyped to see what that looks like. And she's representing for the Short Hair Crew, so I appreciate that as well. And sort of what she's going to look like, particularly when Megan Rapinoe gets back or Shirley Cruz gets back from international duty, and she's got those midfielders that can really feed her those passes. So yeah, I'm excited to see her future. I think we're going to know her name for a long time. So yeah.
I'm looking forward to seeing Sydney LaRue with the Orlando Pride, you know, the legendary, the greatness that is Sydney LaRue. She hasn't been on the national team in a minute because she's brought into the world 2 beautiful children and has been getting back into shape. And so now in the Vlacko era, where he's in charge of the U.S. women's national team, you know, she used to play for him And yep. so there is a chance if she's balling out of control, mm-hmm. she could appear on this roster in June. Yes. Because let us not forget, Sydney LaRue was a problem, can be a problem, and is a great, phenomenal problem and baller to have on your squad. And she's played with a lot of the players that are currently on the team. She has phenomenal chemistry with players. I mean, she's assistant Kristen Press, Tobin Heath,
yes.
Megan Rapinoe. Like she plays with Alex Morgan.
Yes.
So it's like you got the chemistry there. You know, it's like, is she back to who she is? I want to see, because I think she could ball out of control for Orlando in this Challenge Cup, particularly since I didn't get a chance to play last year because of COVID in this Panini panorama pandemic that prevented them from showcasing their skills.
Yes.
So I'm looking forward to seeing what she looks like. Who else you got out here in these streets?
Yeah, we love Sid LaRue here at Shea Butter FC. And a friendly reminder to you all, of the current crop of 30-year-olds, she is the youngest. So
she is.
So never forget that. So I think she'll be back for sure. And Vlacco has proven that he's willing to give people second and maybe third chances. So I'm excited to see that. For me, I got Simone Charlie. So again, another one who stood out last year, or another player, sorry, forward, that stood out last year during the Challenge Cup, particularly in the absence of an injured Sophia Smith, who's very much in the national team pool. I think she and Morgan Weaver hopefully and likely have figured out how to play together. I also think it will absolutely help that two of the best players in the world, in Lindsey Horan and Crystal Dunn, who's likely in the midfield for Portland. So that should be interesting. Friendly reminder to those who forgot, Crystal Dunn is now in Portland because life is unfair. So I think with the services that they'll be, you know, providing and sort of those runs, those overlapping runs where she can play off of that, that'll work to her skill set. It might take them a minute to gel, but that team is loaded with talent. And I think she's a ridiculously good complement to that. I think Portland is set, you know, with the impending retirement. I'm not writing off Christine Sinclair yet. One of the GOATs. Don't want to do that. But I think she's a lot more career behind her than in front of her. And that's an incredibly young front line with Charlie and Weaver and Smith. And I'm excited, though I will be rooting against them, to see what that front line is going to look like for the next 5 to 10 years, for sure. I think they'll be one of the greats. I think they all have slightly different games. And I think Simone Charlie is an excellent complement, and maybe the one who doesn't get as much attention because she wasn't the first or second pick in the first round. So props to you, Simone Charlie. We're looking forward to seeing you do more great things, hitting some Shea Butter palms and playing really well with a loaded team that is the Portland Thorns.
And so I also would like to give a shout out, and who else I'm looking forward to in Mallory Pugh. She going to appear for the Chicago Red Stars, my team, my old team. I still look out for you, even though I'm now an Angel City FC fan. Let's go. And so I'm looking forward to her playing in the system that Kristen Press cooked and built. And then what Sam Kerr then took to another level. What that system will do with Mallory Pugh, how she will evolve. Will she be leveraged on the wing? Will he try to do what he did with both of them and utilizing her in multiple positions? Because I want to see her succeed and be great again. She is super young. People forget that she is 22. She might be younger than Katarina Macario, who is just now playing professionally. Keep in mind, Mal literally left school to join the national team. And and didn't even go to college effectively. So, you know, this is a chance for her to get back in the game, to heal up, get healthy, and to ball out of control in Chicago and hopefully get back on the team.
Yeah.
And honestly, even if she balls out in the cup, she's been to the Olympics. She's been in big tournaments, international tournaments. Mm-hmm. She very well could reappear on the roster. Mm-hmm. So I'm looking forward to her balling. For sure,
absolutely.
For sure.
And I think Mal Pugh at her best is a can't miss national team selection for sure. I've always said I think that's the closest thing just naturally that I've seen to Mia Hamm on that national team. So I really hope that she can get unblocked and get healthy and ball out because she can play many places. So absolutely. And our last person to look out for, saved it for last because go Cougs always. It's Trinity Rodman. So
yeah,
I think both of us are very excited to see her play professionally
again, very young player, 18 years old, decided with COVID to forego her college career. We're very sad about it here, but super excited to see her play in the league. I've heard she's been doing some phenomenal things preseason, including hitting some shea butter bombs. And just having studied up on her, read up on her, seen a little bit of her, seems like her two favorite players in the sort of the tactical approaches and the approaches to shooting and ball handling are modeled after Kristen Preston, Tobin Heath, which seems like an unfair combination with that level of talent. So it might take her a Challenge Cup or maybe even the season, but she was a nominee for Young Player of the Year for the country. And I think she's going to be it, right? I think she's going to be one on the depth chart sooner rather than later. She's just got an incredibly unique skill set. She's fast. She's good on the ball. She's tenacious. She, like you said, players that want to embarrass people, she's definitely one of those players. And so,
and she, it's so, and like with her in particular, how she described, if you haven't read the article,
ESPN article, I believe.
Yeah, where she talks about how she models her game after Tobin Heath and Kristen Press. Like the level of detail in terms of how she analyzed their game.
Yes.
She's like a teenager.
Right.
She's, like, just think as she adds tools to the toolbox and develops her skill set, what that's going to look like. She's already there and is really close to even playing with them on a national team. So, you know, she's going to be really, really, really good really, really quickly and really, really a problem, particularly for the upcoming World Cup in 2023. Oh, but we'll get into that in the future. You know what I'm saying?
We plenty talked about that. Plenty of time.
So I guess, do we need to get into our little special segment?
Yes. So I'm going to let you kick that one off then. But yeah, this is the last major segment for us. And then we will wrap it up and let y'all get on with your day.
Well, so let's get into these things. We call it the rants and raves, where we're going to rant a little bit and then we're going to get some raves and cheers and then you're going to be on your way. So I guess I'm first on the docket. You know, my rant is dedicated to these individuals who have these horrible hot takes on this, on Al Gore's internet, where they decide that they want to effectively call Black players overrated. And the, from what I've seen for over the last few months, the two Black players in particular are some of our faves, and Kristen Press and Crystal Dunn, where we go, oh no, Crystal Dunn is not really the number one player in the world, or Kristen Press isn't really that good. And it's like, we get on all these hot takes. Lord Jesus, with Manchester United losing games, even today, people were talking about Kristen Press is overrated. Like, Kristen Press didn't even play today. She was hurt.
She wasn't even in the stadium.
Or then, even with Crystal Dunn, where Sebastian Salazar, you know, gave props and said, yo, she should be ranked number one in the world. I saw people saying, nah, Crystal Dunn, she played in those positions years ago. She hasn't been ranked that high and all this and blah, blah, blah. And it's like, yo, let's not do this. So let me do some favors for you. Before you decide that you're going to make hot takes on these Black players and disparage their names, I'm going to need you to do some things. Particularly because you like to do this with Black players in particular. You even do this with Lauren James, and she's super young, you know, but you won't do that for anybody's white counterpart. So let me give you some advice. What you need to do is, when you feel moved that you want to talk about somebody like a Kristen Press or Crystal Dunn, you apply this to other players, particularly for these two players. What you need to do is then open up your internet browser and type in the WW for the World Wide Web. And get on there and get you on your Wikipedia page. Search their Wikipedia pages. Go scroll down to the section for when they played in the National Women's Soccer League, the NWSL. Look for the teams and the years they played for. Kristen Press, you know, see, she played for the Chicago Red Stars. She played for the Utah Royals. In terms of Crystal Dunn, she played for the Washington Spirit, Portland Thorns. And then you go take yourself to the National Women's Soccer League homepage, or even go to YouTube and look for the years they played, and then type in the years they played and look for the games, and then go click on the film and watch the tape and watch them ball, and watch both of them in particular ball out, beast out, and one mixtape, embarrass people, put goals on people's foreheads, and play multiple positions. Be hybrid players. They're out here being midfielders and forwards at the same time, even playing defense and doing it all game, cooking people up, dragging people to the playoffs who have no business being the playoffs, winning whole league championships, being in the best 11, mm-hmm. like balling out of control. Yes. And then you stop playing these games and saying that they ain't worth a damn. Because let me be clear, Black women, Black people, but particularly Black women have to go above and beyond the call of duty to be balling as they need to get any recognition or props. And so y'all like to say they ain't worth a damn or they not doing this thing when they actually do the thing all the time. And so, you know, they have to be so great to be and exist in a sport that's so white, you know? And so it's like, it trips me out when we say they're overrated when in fact they're underrated.
Amen.
You know, because we don't correctly give them their flowers. And that's a travesty. And that's got to stop. Ladies, keep balling. Keep dropping them shea butter bombs. What you got, man?
Amen to that. Amen to that. Mine's going to be brief. But I just want to talk to some of the adults in WOSO.
Uh-oh.
Fandom, Twitter, whatever we're going to call it.
Actually, the media also.
It's the media, but it's people who have access within women's soccer who are grown and have salaries and benefits, and in some cases, children. Mm-hmm. Okay, so listen. Part of what my homie here just said, right, was Black women are rarely overrated because they're rarely rated, right? Mm-hmm. So WOSO Twitter is not a huge place, right? There are also a lot of young people on WOSO Twitter. I'm talking teenagers, early 20s at best, right? Who have particularly gravitated toward the Crystal Presses, toward the Crystal Duns, toward the Sizzle Brews, toward the Midge Purses, right? Because they're Black women and or women of color, right? These are the players that they go up for because here's a newsflash, when people of color don't see themselves, they look for themselves. They look for representation so they can imagine the possibilities, right? And if you love a sport, you want to see yourself reflected in it.
Mm-hmm.
I was never going to play goalkeeper, but I sure as heck cared about what Brian Scurry did when I was young, right?
Tell me.
And if I had been on Twitter, I would be obnoxious about Brian Scurry, right? If there had been a Twitter in the 90s. So I'm saying all of that to say, as somebody who works with young people pretty much every day of her life, right? They absolutely have wrong takes, right? And wrong opinions. They're young. Their brains are not fully developed. They're going to get it wrong and they're going to be loud about getting it wrong. But when we're on social media, particularly on a Twitter, where you have the option to scroll past or mute or block them, you all instead choose to engage in ways that are very much like punching down. And I want you to understand you are punching down to Black and brown young people, oftentimes queer Black and brown young people. And so as the adults in the room, I just wanted to take a second before we react because our buttons have been pushed or we've been disagreed with because we're supposed to be able to handle that, mm-hmm. particularly if we get paid to have an opinion.
Right.
I want us to take a moment and pause and question why we so viscerally feel the need to punch down at young people. We've got to stop that. We're the adults. We have to set the example and we have to do the work.
Mm-hmm.
And it makes me incredibly uncomfortable to see that happen fairly regularly as if no lessons have been learned. And I know this isn't going to make me friends or fans, and that's fine. I don't live my life that way. I don't need your validation. I'm a Black woman. You're not going to give it to me anyway. So check yourselves. Right. As adults, I say that to myself as well. Check yourselves before you say something or do something that's going to cause irrevocable damage to young people who are just trying to find some joy in a world that does not love them.
Right.
Okay.
And particularly when it happens because the...
because they're defending Black players, perhaps?
Yeah, and they're usually right.
Oh, yeah, they're right more than they're not. And again, when you have the option, always the option to just scroll past, ignore it, block it, or mute it.
Not that
hard. I hope you're not doing engagement with people you don't like for content, because that is a reflection on you and not the young people. I'm going to give you the benefit of the doubt, and I don't do that a lot, but let's just check ourselves as adults. Let's be adults. Let's be better. Let's lead by example so that we can bring more people into this fandom and not run them out. Word. That's my rant.
And so, well, so now you gave a sermon right there. So what's your rant for this week? Because I let the people know about some greatness out right now.
Yeah, absolutely. So my rave, and I could do this all day, but my rave is the shout out to Gabriela Alvarez, who hit a ridiculous goal from about 25, 26 yards and Liga Mexico Femenil, which, by the way, if you can catch games or highlights or whatever of this league, they are balling out of control.
Balling!
It's never boring. They score beautiful goals. They make beautiful passes. And shout out to the Mexican national team. They hired their first woman, I believe, late in 2020. And that team's coming. So for the rest of CONCACAF, and I'm talking to our own national team as well, be prepared. The Mexican team is going to be here, and they're going to be here for a while. And I'm going to enjoy watching them play, even if I don't want them to beat my team. Sometimes I might want them to beat my team. But yeah, I just want to shout out Gabriela Alvarez, who absolutely made a ridiculous goal. I think she put her team up 2-0, and they just like ran around the field like little kids, berserk. The coach was hugging on people. It was fantastic. And that's what this sport is about. It's fun. It's a game. It's a beautiful game. It's the best right. game in the world. So
yo, that goal made you go, woo.
Yeah.
That was like, woo.
When you like screw up, when you screw up your face, like, ooh, yeah.
I was like, oh, I was like, boo. So yeah, she did that.
She did it for real. So shout out to her, Gabriela Alvarez. And I believe she plays for Juarez. So shout out. What's your rave?
So my rave, I guess, is, you know, I got to get the props, because even though we drop one this week, you know,
yes,
Kristen Press and Laura James made that Black girl magic happen, that Black woman magic. They did that thing.
They did
in the great Old Trafford, in one of the best stadiums in the world.
All right. Can't you say that? I'll give it to you.
Excuse me. Recognize greatness.
I already did my rant. So
they did that thing. So Manchester United women's team, they played in the stadium for the first time, and Lauren James scored the first goal and made that history. And with the beautiful header, then Kristen Press came through. She wasn't even in the picture. She came rolling through after getting hit a little bit, and then made a beautiful run to connect with a beautiful pass from Jackie Gronin and scored the second goal. So yes. It was like Shea Butter Bombs times two in the great Old Trafford. And it brought beautiful moisturization. It laid my edges. It had me just right. I was just like, hey. It probably even made Sil want to become a Manchester United fan.
Ooh, don't take it too far, but it was good for the soul. And as the kids say, Kristen hit the Zoom. So I'm always zoom, here zoom. For the Zoom, because that's one of my favorite things in all of soccer. So yeah, it was wonderful. And I cheered for Manchester United out loud. And it was worth it. It was worth it because Kristen and Lauren scored goals, both players that I like very, very much. So I was happy to see it, and I was happy that they made history at Old Trafford, even if it was our team I don't like. So congratulations. And
yeah, they did,
ladies.
Yeah, they did that thing. So I basically, yeah, well, that's about it for this week. So I guess we need to preview what's happening on this next week episode. There's some, I think it's like an international break, but the Challenge Cup is happening anyway.
Yeah. We're doing those at the same time. So yeah, next week we will delve more into the Challenge Cup. First couple of games for sure. The 9th and the 10th are the first games. You can check the NWSL.com for the full schedule. All games will be on Paramount Plus. It is a subscription service, but it's well worth it. I subscribe, so get yourself your soccer fix. We also have international friendlies. The United States will be playing Sweden on the 10th, always a pesky opponent for us. And then some version of the French squad on the 13th.
Yep. And I thought you said you wanted to see like Spain's playing Mexico.
Oh yeah. So Spain is scheduled to play Mexico. And if I can find that game somewhere on my internet or my television, I will be glued to my TV.
Oh, that's going to be fun.
That's my kind of football right there, for sure.
That's going to be fun. Yeah, so, you know, there's gonna be some shea butter bombs, all kind of bombs, all up in there.
Yes.
So I guess it's about that time for us to piece it out. So let's get to it. So as we will say every week, want to make sure you stay hydrated,
stay melanated,
make sure the Black women in your life are celebrated,
and make sure your shea butter bombs are always elevated.
And have a great week. Stay blessed. Stay fresh. And do what you need to. And we'll see you soon.
Peace. Stay safe and goodbye. Shit.